Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association's weekly blog radio. I'm here today. I'm Janice Cromer, the director, and Steve Cromer, who also works on member services and technical issues, is with us in case anything goes wrong. So be ready, Steve. Before we get started, I'd like to thank and publicly announce our Admiral sponsors. We appreciate their support. We've got Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications. AGLCA, as we call ourselves, is an organization of people who share a sense of adventure and camaraderie of America's Great Loop. For those not familiar with the Great Loop, it's the continuous waterway that circles the eastern portion of North America. Our association was formed to disseminate information about this great journey. For those wishing to learn more about the Great Loop, please visit our website. It's www.greatloop.org. Non-members can join the association at that site, and we are taking registrations for our one-day seminar in Fort Myers Beach, Florida, in January. It's designed to give you a taste for what the cruising lifestyle is really about for the Great Loop. Our guest hosts this week are Russ and Cindy Varney. The Varneys' home port is St. Petersburg, Florida, and they've been AGLCA members since 2009. Russ and Cindy completed their loop in 2010 on their 46-foot Heritage East Ladybug. Russ has been cruising the west coast of Florida for more than 55 years now. Today, he'll share his thoughts on crossing the Panhandle, how to make that tough decision, alternate towns that you can cross to, and things to do on the other side if weather isn't cooperating. Russ and Cindy, welcome. Thanks so much for being on our show this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's good to talk to you.
Thank
Janice
you.
And Steve, we really appreciate the AGLCA and all the sponsors, of course, your staff, Kim and Steve and everybody. We really appreciate them. And
well,
we
thank
a lot
you.
Out
That's
of-
really nice to hear. I'll make sure I pass it on to the whole team. Russ, I'm really interested about what it was like to grow up on the Gulf. I guess it was a lot of boating. Why don't you give us a little flavor of that?
Well, I grew up in Crystal River. In 1958, I bought my first boat. I was 11 years old, and one of the men that rented boats there in town, it was a 14-foot cypress plank fishing boat with forelocks. And he sold it to me for $5. And I've been hooked on boating ever since.
And you actually, you were how old did you say?
I was 11.
And your parents let you go out on the Gulf in this little boat?
Well, sure. Actually, my dad rode with me briefly one time and said I was not allowed to go past Christmas Island, which is right at the head of the river, but that didn't hold at all. The river was there, and the islands at the edge of the Gulf were just right for this little boat and our little boats that we had back then, because the water's very shallow. There's a lot of oyster bars, but we could explore to our heart's content.
It's absolutely beautiful, and you're still boating on the Gulf now, correct? How many times have you and Cindy crossed the Panhandle?
About six times in various stages. We've done things like, even when we didn't cross, we've made excursions to the Suwannee or to Cedar Key or up the Withlacoochee, although I haven't been up there in probably 8 or 10 years, the Barge Canal. you know, Steinhatchee, Homosassa, all those rivers. You know, we've been in and out of those in various boats over the years. We used to do more fishing, so we were constantly in and out, and now that we're cruisers, we make longer jumps and stay longer when we get there.
When you cross, what are your two ports of call? I mean, you go from, you had mentioned on the phone the other day that there are alternative ports that you can cross to that might make your journey a little bit shorter.
Well, yes, it's kind of a trade-off is the way I look at it. And, if you look at it, the crossing is actually a shortcut. If you want to jump across at various points, you're taking a shortcut, because the longest way around in miles and time is to work your way around the coast. Now, in the old days, they talked about the markers at the Big Bend route, and those were put in place before GPS was really in wide use. And those are pretty much obsolete now. There's no, back then you would go from the Big Bend marker to marker because dead reckoning is imperfect. But now with GPS chart plotters and so forth, there's, in my estimation, there's no real reason to take that long way. For, you know, they used to talk about going from Carrabelle to St. Mark's to Steinhatchee to Cedar Key to Withlacoochee or Crystal River and kind of bump your way down. The problem with that is not so much in miles, but every time you add a port of call to your itinerary, so to speak, it adds a lot of time off your route into a safe harbor or anchorage and then back out the next time. I've got a couple of routes just kind of for consideration that people can kind of think about and see, you know, how they would want to modify it for their own use. But the route that keeps you closest to shore, in my estimation, would be to do something like this. Go out to the east end of Dog Island and anchor, and then the next morning leave around the east end of Dog Island and go to Steinhatchee. Now, that's about 56 miles as you would plot your route. But it's about 4 miles to the beginning of the route and then 4 miles into Steinhatchee when you get there. So that's a total of about 64 miles. That's a 9-hour day for a 7.5-knot trawler. So that's a pretty good day. And then from there, you could, it's going to take you, by the time you get out to the Gulf, go south, to Cedar Key, and then go into the anchorage. That'll be 54 nautical miles, the day number two, and that's 8 hours or so at 7.5 knots. These are nautical miles now. And then the third day, you could go from Cedar Key anchorage to Anclote Key, Tarpon Springs area, And that, again, would be about another 9-hour day. So those are three pretty even days. And it's about 182 nautical miles by the time you count going into anchor at Cedar Key, going into the marina, let's say, at Steinhatchee, and then getting to an anchorage around Tarpon Springs, Anclote Key. Now, if you compare that with, let's just say, you went from East Pass up there just south of Carrabelle. If you went out of East Pass and went directly to Clearwater, to Clearwater Municipal Marina, that's 154 miles. So it's cost you
at least 30 miles further to
the ultimate destination. On the crossing. So that just as a comparison, you go more or less 154 mile crossing straight to Clearwater, or by the time you stop at Steinhatchee, Cedar Key, Anklot Key, and then get to Clearwater, now you're over 200 nautical miles versus 154 is a straight shot. That's kind of the decision you make.
Do you have a recommendation, or, I mean, what do you usually do?
Well, we have friends in Steinhatchee, so we like to go to Steinhatchee when we can. But I think that most people are likely going to be most comfortable going straight across from East Pass to Anklot Key or Clearwater. And that, just go ahead and commit to the night crossing because you want to arrive in the daylight. You won't leave in the daylight. During the time of year when people are making the crossing, stone crab season is in effect, and the stone crab pots are close to shore. They're in usually 50 feet of water or less, so you don't want to be treading your way through there in the dark, because if you wrap one around your propeller, it could shut you down for several hours, and then your schedule has been of when you want to arrive has been turned upside down.
So, you know, I've heard very, very often in the discussion forum, you hear about the terrible, terrible crab pots. I've never heard of anybody actually getting their props tangled. Do you know if it happens often, or is that just kind of the people, you know, our boaters are really, really careful? Any opinion on that, Russ?
Well, the opinion is that it's one of those things that's like driving without your seatbelt. You get away with it more often than not. But if you ever encounter that particular calamity where you need it, I've wrapped them around my propeller, and I like to think I'm careful, but I've done it more than once.
You have.
One time, it even picked up the crab trap and wrapped a piece of rebar weight around the propeller in a like a corkscrew, and the propeller had to be removed to get it off.
Wow. I guess that's so one of the reasons that Tom and now Eddie kind of suggest you travel with at least one buddy boat. If you do have problems, you've got somebody there who can help you out, hopefully. I think we just
sure.
Take a really quick break, if you don't mind, Russ and Cindy. We would like to have a little commercial from
sure.
Our very nice commander sponsor, Homeport Marina.
Sure.
Homeport Marina is the Alabama Gulf Coast's premier facility, located in beautiful Gulf Shores, Alabama. Amenities include concrete floating docks, 30, 50, and 100-amp electrical services, Valtech gasoline and diesel, phone, cable, wireless internet is available, pump-out facilities, and 24-hour restrooms, showers, and laundry. Homeport Marina is a proud commander sponsor of the AGLCA. For more information, visit www.homeportmarina.net.
Thanks, Beth.
Okay. So we're back. But I prefer the night crossing because that gives you plenty of time to arrive at your destination in the daylight.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have to try to weave through the crab pot. And on a twin-engine boat, you would still be able to continue under one engine, worst case. Most of the time during the daylight, if you pick one up, it's about an hour problem to get it disentangled, especially if you're trying to preserve the marker for the crabber that put it there and not tear up his gear any more than you have to. So.
An hour to get untangled is kind of conservative. It could be a lot. I think it could be a lot more time than that.
Well, it could be, but again, that's just one of those things that's hard to plan for. And if it adds 2 hours to your day, and we've got 10.5 hours of daylight these days, and so you end up arriving someplace, and maybe you're being cautious, checking your position, and that adds time to your crossing. You end up being in an unfamiliar channel in the dark, and there's not any good channels to come in the dark on the Big Bend. There are some that are doable, but they're really not ones that you'd want to recommend across the board. Clearwater's the only one.
Really?
Yeah, you can do some of them, but I think that if people are wanting to make the best crossing possible, they don't plan on dealing with these inlets in the dark.
No. Okay. From what I'm reading in the discussion forum, we've got kind of a backup of loopers in the Apalachicola area. Since you know the Gulf so well, do you have any recommendations on what people can do while they're waiting? I hear there's not much in Carabel at all.
Well, what we do when we're there, and like we're kind of weathered in here in Pelican Bay, it's been blowing upwards of 20, 25 knot gusts here for 3 days. But we are in a protected area. We can still get out in the dinghy and do some dinghy exploration. Just have to go the right way and not get out of the protected zone.
Uh-huh.
That same situation exists in Carabel. The Crooked River can be explored from Carabel a long way up, and it's very pretty with a lot of wildlife and not too much development. And then the other thing, too, is it's okay to backtrack. I mean, even if it's blowing from the north or northeast, you can still get out and make a run back to Apalachicola if you choose to, if your boat's up to it. And Apalachicola River is navigable for over 100 miles. So there's unlimited dinghying in that area if you'd like to do things like that. Now, in my case, there's an endless supply of boat chores on my list. And there's plenty of things to do. So we spend a lot of time doing boat chores and just general organization.
Uh-huh.
Every time I do that, I find things in lockers that should be in another locker, or I had forgotten I had, or I'd never seen before. So that's fun to do. Another thing that I do and have been doing here in the last day or two is organizing my waypoints and routes. And part of it was to get some information for what we're doing today, but part of it was just end up putting in a waypoint and it's not as organized as it could be. That
uh-huh.
takes time to do that, and this is perfect time. We love being on the boat, and Cindy cooked a big pot of chili. And there's, you know, what we've done too, like on Lake Michigan when we were weathered in, we rented a car with another couple and went sightseeing around the area, and we had a ball doing that.
That's a good alternative.
When we were in Carabel, I understand that there was a location you could get a car to rent to go up to Tallahassee or up in that area also.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of options. You know, we particularly like the dinghy, and as Russ said, the Apalachicola River, we anchored up in there and had some great times there.
Yeah, we anchored there. We actually rafted up with another cruising boat up at about 10 miles above Apalachicola. Beautiful, secluded, very dark at night. Just interesting, very interesting cruising in that area.
Uh-huh. It
sounds
like you like to anchor a lot.
Oh, yes, we do. We're anchors, and we like to cruise with the boat, too. We're more cruise-oriented than destination-oriented.
Uh-huh.
More often than not, we don't really have a clear destination when we leave somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, that's true. We don't. So that's just the way we do it. Not everybody be comfortable there. But when we left St. Petersburg the other day, we didn't know where we were going to anchor out. It's no problem to find a spot around here.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times when we're cruising and we set out in the morning, Russ will have like 3 or 4 different possible anchorages so that depending on what time of day we want to stop and what time we're making, then we've got a plan, not just a destination, but we've got some alternatives of making a choice as we go along.
That's interesting, and most of our cruisers that are in the area right now are destination-oriented. They just want to get across and start their winter vacation in Florida. So that's a little bit different, but you're in your home, you know, your home waters. How cold is it down there right now? I haven't heard this morning, but I hear you. It's really, besides windy, it's been very cold.
Well, right now it's 58. It's been in the 40s at night, but warmed up during the day. We've been able to take the dinghy over to Cayo Costa, the state park, and hike, you know, during the day.
That's really not that bad.
Oh, no, it's very...
North Michigan, what was it? Some parts, I think, have... What was it, New York or Michigan, Steve? 6 feet of snow yesterday? Unbelievable.
Oh, no, this is much to be preferred over that.
And yes. Actually, oh, yeah.
Well, one thing that we've done in Pelican Bay is a great place for it. If you're going to have a lot of wind, which we've had, we're in a protective anchorage where we can get the dinghy and dinghy across to the island, where we would not be able to get outside of this area because of the wind and the waves. We're in a pretty protective area, and if you plan ahead, if you know you could be weathered in, pick you a good place to be weathered in.
Mm-hmm. When you're on the western side of the panhandle and stuck there for several days, just curious, are there places to provision, or do you need to rent a car to be able to stock up again if you kind of deplete your supplies waiting to get across?
Well, Apalachicola we find very walkable. Port St. Joe, we've gone across to the Panhandle to go to Port St. Joe. We like being in the marina there, and there's a grocery store immediately next door, and most of the services that you would need are very handy. And it's a very inviting town and a very friendly marina. The little bay there is good dinghy, and the beaches are pretty much secluded and very pretty there. So, of course, backing up further, you know, we love Destin in that area. We love Panama City in that area. We love Pensacola. So I think that if you can linger across the Panhandle, there's no reason to rush. This is the boating time that we prefer the Panhandle. And when we left St. Petersburg Friday, and we didn't, until we got under the Skyway, we hadn't 100% decided that we weren't going north. We thought about going to Destin this trip, but we turned south instead.
Well, it is nice to have the freedom that you've got of just being able to just go out and cruise, and wherever the wind or waves take you, that's where you're going today. That's a good plan.
Well, the schedule, if you feel like that you just made a commitment to be somewhere on a certain time, or particularly when you try to meet people or you have to be home, you know, there can be reasons to be on a schedule. But if you just mentally give yourself some flexibility and not be too tied to the day of the week, it makes the cruising decisions, in my mind, a lot easier. Because the main thing you want when we're cruising in small boats like we do is to decide, is it safe to make this next leg? And that's a totally different consideration than, will I be comfortable? You know, but
it's
a
very
it's
good
safe,
point.
First,
go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, if the boat can handle the conditions and the crew is up to it and it's safe in those ways, sometimes it's better to put up with a little discomfort, and if the boat's rocking or rolling a little bit, just tie everything down, and as long as it's safe, you know, enjoy it as best you can, because you're likely to get to some place that you really want to be rather than getting stuck in some place you've kind of gotten tired of.
I think there is a That's a really good point. There's a big difference between being comfortable and being safe. And I would imagine every crew and every captain has to make that decision, and they have different tolerance levels.
Yes, it's very dependent on the boat, the captain and the crew, because if the crew is just exhausted, either mentally or physically, then it's no longer a safe cruise. So you have to assess what the crew's up to. But I have one other little suggestion, and I don't know if it's a suggestion, but it's just a thought that I had. And I just kind of, as we're talking about this, I imagine myself, you know, coming under the Gory Bridge at Apalachicola, and I'm heading kind of in the back of my mind, I'm thinking I'm going to Carrabelle and then wait for a weather window to jump. But if I've been following the weather, maybe the weather is decent, so I stick the bow out of Government Cut, just going straight out of Apalachicola instead of turning east to Carrabelle, and actually kind of northeast. I would, let's say I went straight out in Government Cut, and at that point I could take a course for Clearwater and do an overnighter, or I could run east along the coast and get to East Pass and decide if I wanted to then continue in the Gulf and go to Clearwater or Encloak, or I could come back in East Pass and still go to Carrabelle, and it's only taken me a mile or two out of the way. So get out in the Gulf, see what the conditions are like.
Uh-huh.
You can always come in East Pass following that itinerary if you don't like the conditions in the Gulf and the prospects for what's coming up in the next 24 hours.
So once you start, it's not a final commitment to finish.
Sure. We turn around all the time. We left St. Pete years ago headed for Port St. Joe, and we were just getting hammered, and so we ended up turning around and coming in Clearwater.
Really?
We left an unnamed river in the Chesapeake, and we were anchored up in the river, and it was so nice and calm and everything. We planned to go out, and we got outside, and it immediately was so rough that we had to actually take great pains in planning just to turn around. We had to plan our turn because the waves were short and steep. I mean, tall and steep.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we are just about out of time. Cindy, do you have anything you'd like to add?
The main thing is just to plan ahead. If you see the weather before you get there, you know, kind of make a plan so that you don't get stuck in one spot for a long time with the weather on the panhandle. Because, you know, if you see fronts coming and you know that it's going to be a while, take your time and enjoy Apalachicola and enjoy the river and places before you get to the spot, before you get to Carrabelle and you sit there for a week.
Uh-huh.
Plan ahead.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is I think, and just in perspective, we were weathered in a lot of days in Lake Michigan on our loop, and sometimes it just seemed like, when will the weather let us do the next leg?
Uh-huh.
But once it's finished and once you get to Chicago, it just seemed like time flew by. The time was just gone, and we were wishing for more time. Rather than dragging the time that we had. So it's funny how that works.
Yeah, it's a matter of perspective, I think. Well, Steve, do you have any questions for Cindy or Russ?
Nope.
Okay, then. I think we're going to close for the show. Cindy and Russ, again, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Everybody out there, have a happy Thanksgiving. Next Friday is probably the only time in the year that we do not have a blog radio show. We like to give the staff and all of our speakers and co-hosts and everyone out there just a happy holiday weekend. So everyone safe cruising for the next 2 weeks. And those of you who are waiting to cross, take your time and enjoy as much as you can. And again, Russ, Cindy, thank you very much. Bye.
Well, you're certainly welcome. Thank you, Janice.